In 1930, a group of Southerners, distressed about encroaching Yankee capitalism, wrote a book called I'll Take My Stand, The South and the Agrarian Tradition. It was a rejection of the values taking hold as the country moved toward industrialization. Today, a group of Southerners, equally distressed about the values that shape American policy, has come out with a new collection of essays, Where We Stand, The Voices of Southern Dissent. Joining me now are two contributors to the book. Paul Gaston is a professor emeritus at the University of Virginia. Hello, Professor Gaston.
Hi, Debbie.
And Gene Nickel is dean of the law school at the University of North Carolina. Hi.
Hi, Debbie. Nice to be here.
Welcome to you both. I'm going to start with Paul Gaston and ask you, Professor, what exactly are you dissenting from?
Gracious, how much time do we have? I guess we're dissenting from two things broadly. One, the sort of direction in which American life has taken, the corporatism, the widening gulf between rich and poor, the tendency toward militarism in American life. And then we are dissenting from the current national administration, which we feel exacerbates all of these deep problems.
I'm curious, do both of you ever feel like a lone voice in the wilderness, so to speak, coming with this view from the South?
I don't think alone is correct. Part of the purpose here is to identify a substantial strain in the South, which believes in human rights and democracy and racial equality and lifting folks up out of poverty, and that is opposed to these powerful and present moves towards American supremacy and power and privilege and growing inequality and the like. We are not alone in that. There are a lot of others who advocate, I think, even more forcefully on these fronts.
I'd like now to go to Professor Gaston and talk a little bit about your essay called My Yellow Ribbon Town, A Meditation on My Country and My Home. You're from Fairhope, Alabama. I actually live near there. I'd call it a quaint little village on the scenic eastern shore of Mobile Bay.
Are you part of Redneck Riviera?
I am. Not far away, right? So, you know, Fairhope has a unique history. It was founded by your grandfather, I understand, as sort of an experimental utopian community. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I wrote this essay that focuses on Fairhope because I wanted to have what has happened to Fairhope as a lens through which I could look at what I see happening to America. Fairhope has turned from a place where people went to solve social problems to a place where people go to escape social problems.
You talk about what has happened there has actually squeezed out regular folk. For example, your hairdresser. Can you talk about the encounter that you had with your hairdresser when you visited recently?
Oh, my gracious. Well, I could read that section. Would you like that?
Sure.
I came to her shop. She would never have called it a salon. Soon after my arrival, and almost immediately, she began dissecting contemporary Fairhope. She never goes down the picturesque main street, she told me, because they have too many rich people there building condos they won't even live in. Fairhope, she informed me, has become a place for rich people. She didn't mention it, but I couldn't help thinking of one of the new shops for upscale ladies' apparel I had seen on my early morning walk. It was called, without irony, Utopia.
That was Professor Paul Gaston reading from his essay, My Yellow Ribbon Town, A Meditation on My Country and My Home. Gene Nickel, I'm curious, do you notice in your home state, North Carolina, the same thing happening, regular folk being squeezed out?
Yeah, that's true in Charlotte. In North Carolina, we have at least two North Carolinas. There are, you know, actually three or four very large gaps between those who are doing remarkably well and those who actually make up a very substantial part of our community who are having a difficult time of it.
You know, a question, a final question to you both, I guess. In the South, moral issues seem to be so important. The Ten Commandments issue, the prayer in public schools. Why is this gap not considered a moral issue?
This won't really answer your question. But let's ask first, why should we be surprised that people do not recognize problems of this sort, major problems in human life, as being moral issues? Think back to the antebellum years when poor whites who owned no slaves supported slavery. Throughout history, and certainly through Southern history and American history, there can be things that we see in retrospect as obvious moral issues, but those people who might benefit most from attacking them don't attack them because other forces have persuaded them to neglect them or to deny them.
Professor Nickel?
I agree with Paul on that. I think there's a long history, particularly in the South, of diversion on these issues, a history of divide and conquer and scapegoating. We see that now, right? We have the North Carolina legislature in session as we speak. We heard legislative leaders talking in the past few days as if the most important thing facing this state has to do with the viability of gay marriage. While the huge issues of economic polarization and separation remain off the table.
Gene Nickel is Dean of the School of Law at the University of North Carolina. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Debbie. I enjoyed being with you.
And Paul Gaston is Professor Emeritus of Southern and Civil Rights History at the University of Virginia. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for this opportunity, Debbie.